Monday. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Guru. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namane Namaste Parasvati Deve Gauravani Satayane Nivasaisa Sundarari Paskachare Satayane Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavascha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raimakam Vitam Samsudhivam Sadvaitam Sadvitam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitan Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Ravita Shri Vishakam Vitam Shcha Vanchikalpa Chubhyascha Kripa Sindhivyavacha Patitinam Pavaneyo Vaishnavevi Namo Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
October 23rd, 2015, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 7, further inquiries by Vidura, Text 4. Asrakshit Bhagavan Vishvam. Guna Maya Atma Mayaya. Taya samsta payatyetar.
Taya samsta payatyetar.
Bhuya pratya piyasyati.
Bhuya pratya piyasyati.
Asrakshit.
Asrakshit.
Cause to create.
Cause to create.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
The personality of Godhead.
The personality of Godhead.
Vishvam.
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 The universe.
The universe.
Guna Maya.
Guna Maya.
Guna Maya.
Endowed with three modes of material nature. Atma.
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 Self.
Self.
Mayaya.
Maya.
By the potency.
By the potency.
Taya.
Taya.
By her.
By her.
Samstapayati.
Samstapayati.
Maintains.
Maintains.
Etat.
All these.
Buyaha.
Buyaha.
Then again.
Prat.
Yapidasyati.
Pratyapidasyati.
Conversely dissolves also.
Conversely.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Remember, this is part of Vidura's questions. So he asked questions. Maitreya started to give answers. And then Maitreya's answers sparked further questions by Vidura. So he's talking, this is in reference to the previous verse where he says that children play because they have some desire, but the Lord is not like that. So now this verse is going on with that point, that the Lord is not like some whimsical child. Translation, by his self-sheltered potency of the three modes of material nature, the Lord has caused the creation of this universe. By her, he maintains the creation. And conversely dissolves it again and again. Purport. This cosmic universe is created by the Lord for those living entities who are carried away by the illusory thought of becoming one with him by imitation. The three modes of material nature are for the further bewilderment of the conditioned souls. The conditioned living entity, bewildered by the illusory energy, considers himself a part of the material creation due to forgetfulness of his spiritual identity, and thus he becomes entangled in material activities life after life. This material world is not for the purpose of the Lord himself. but it is for the conditioned souls who wanted to be controllers due to misuse of their God-gifted minute independence. Thus, the conditioned souls are subjected to repeated birth and death. Asrakshid Bhagavan Vishvam Guna Mayatma Mayaya Taya Samsta Payatyetad Bhuya Pratya Pihasyati. By his self-sheltered potency of the three modes of material nature, the Lord has caused the creation of this universe. By her, he maintains the creation and conversely dissolves it again and again. So this is the root question again. Yet again, why are we here? Why are we suffering? Why is there unfairness? Why do some people have more than me, better than me? Why are some people in horrible conditions? They seem to be innocent. You know, why are innocent children born into a place of war and famine, and other innocent children born into a place of opulence and peace? Why is there this kind of disparity? Why is there unfairness in my life? I'm a good person. I really try to do the right thing, and yet I suffer. And other people who are evil, they prosper. And why does the world exist altogether? You know, the Darwinists, they have this idea that everything just happened by some sort of cosmic accident, and by mutations, entities evolved that were better and better suited for living on the planet, and each species evolved to be in harmony with its environment. But frankly, the lowest species of life are the most perfectly suited for living on the Earth. The Earth is much more filled with the lower living entities who do not require the higher living entities for their survival. And if you just had a bunch of bacteria, they would multiply without any problem. There was no need to evolve into human beings who systematically destroy the planet and destroy the possibility of life for everybody else. So, you know, why does everything exist, and why does everything exist perfectly suited for its environment, the right plants, the right insects, the right bugs, and the perfect web of life, where you have the food chain and you have the pollinators that are with the plant, all these things in perfect harmony. Why does it all exist? We see both things, everything perfectly suited to its environment, perfect harmony, symbiosis, a web of life. And then we see the disparities and the unfairness and the struggle and all of the suffering in life, the suffering of disease. You know, why is there disease? And probably there's a repeated birth and death. Why is there babyhood with its suffering? Old age with its suffering. Right? We have a little baby in the house, and we look at the baby and think, oh, I don't want to have that kind of body. But old age can also be like that. You know, old age, one can again become in diapers, without language, without function. So why are these things, why are they there? And many religions on the planet, I'd say the religions that have the greatest number of adherents on the Earth planet at the present time, taught that God created the world out of nothing. And they don't really explain what the purpose of the world is. They speak of our creation as starting in the womb of our mother, that we did not exist before the conception of you know, mother's womb. And we're basically born into suffering and inequality. And although we see the brilliance and the intelligence of this world beyond human reckoning. We were talking about that the other day, the wonder of the world, the wonder of photosynthesis, the wonder of the metamorphosis from the caterpillar to the butterfly, the wonder and beauty of the sunset over the ocean and the mountains. And although we see that, still there's all this difficulty in life. So why would an obviously very intelligent being, I mean, anybody with a billionth of a brain can see that a highly intelligent, capable, artistic being has created this place. Why would they have created a place that's also full of so much suffering, so much inequality, so much struggle? Mamevamso jivaloke jivabhutasanadhina prakritestani manashastran indriyani prakritestani karshati, such a struggle, a struggle with the senses. You know, my senses want to eat more than I'm capable of digesting. My senses are not satisfied with their quota. whatever I have, you know, my romantic partner, I want another one, I want a different one, my food, I want more, I want to hear more, I want to see more. And then my mind, I do something wrong and I deny it, I didn't do anything wrong, how dare you say I did anything wrong. And, you know, hours or weeks or years later, I come and say, oh, you're right, I'm so sorry. It's so painful to say I'm sorry. Such a struggle. Such a struggle. And every day we say, today I'm going to do the right thing. Today I'm going to act the way I want to act. And again, we fail over and over and over again. So why this struggle? So one answer, of course, is that the Lord is just whimsical, like a child. That although the Lord is very intelligent and very capable, beyond, again, any human reckoning, beyond the reckoning of all the human beings put together, that if all of the human beings of the planet had their collective intelligence, we could not understand even the workings of one insect in its entirety, what to speak of the whole planet, what to speak of the universe. Scientists estimate that they're seeing utmost 4 or 5% of the matter in the universe. So why would this being create such a difficult, struggling, inequitable world? He must be whimsical. He must be like a child is whimsical. Right? The little child, this woman, a house full of children, and they're very whimsical. They say, oh, I love to do this. I love to cut out pictures and paste them on cardboard and make art projects. And so you say, okay, so you go to the store and you buy the paper and you buy the stuff and you say, okay, let's do it. No, I don't like doing projects. I don't want to do a project. Or even, I hate doing projects. You know, I love bananas, right? And you buy bananas and I don't like bananas. They're whimsical. Their decisions are not made on the basis of any kind of plan or any kind of intelligence. They're not very fair. They're interested in themselves, what they can get from themselves. They have their toys, but they're just as likely to break their toys as they are to play with them. To lose their toys, even their favorite toys, even the things they like the best. They misplace them, they break them, and so forth. Not only the modern religions, they seem to have an idea of God being whimsical. In the Bible is the story of Job, where Job suffers unbelievably because God makes some bet with the devil. Right? The devil says, I bet you can make Job become unfaithful to you. And so God says, okay, I take on the bet. And he kills all of Job's children. I think Job has like 10 or 12 children. And he destroys all of Job's prosperity, all of his flocks, and all of his wealth. And then the devil comes and says, well, we didn't touch him. So then God gives him terrible diseases and pain. And, you know, and when Job finally asks God, why did I suffer so much? And God says, oh, you can't understand this. You know, just some whimsical game the Lord is having. And of course, and those who are demigod worshippers, the Greeks, the Roman, the Norse, the Celtics, they portray the world as being run by also whimsical demigods, where you can bribe them. You know, you give them some worship, some bribe, and then they do what you want. And some demigods fight on one side, and some demigods fight on the other side. And, you know, that everything is just whimsy. It's all just capriciousness. And they don't present God as being malicious exactly, but they present him as being selfish, with qualities of just using us for his own whimsical pleasures. So Vidura is making the point in this verse that that's not possible. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse that Vidura's point is that the Lord does not have any material qualities or material activities, and such is well known to everyone. That one cannot think of the Lord's qualities or activities in terms of what we see in this world. He is called, in one sense, Nirguna. He doesn't have material qualities. He doesn't have material aspects. It's not who he is. Does that mean that God is just the Brahman, nirguna, he's just Brahman. Well, no, because Brahman has no, without a personality, one cannot create. But I've heard even many devotees of Krishna put forward the idea that this world is created because it's necessary for the Lord's own lilas. And they'll make the point that, well, the Lord doesn't take birth in the spiritual world, he only takes birth in his lilas in the material world, he only fights demons here, that's part of what he enjoys, and therefore he creates the material world with its concomitant miseries and frustrations and struggles and so forth as a stage for his own lilas. This is also not understanding the Lord. The Lord does not at all in any way, shape, or form require that some living entities are struggling or suffering and so forth, taking births and deaths. He does not require this to fulfill any of his desires. He's Atmarama Aptikama. He can fulfill all of his desires by himself. The fact that it's necessary for the jiva, so the Lord also has his pastimes here, just like the president or prime minister of a country may have some activities in visiting a prison house. But that doesn't mean that prisons are necessary. And there may be some satisfaction in visiting the prison house and accomplishing something there. But again, that doesn't mean that there's some necessity, that the person could not have gained that satisfaction in another way. So in the same way, Krishna can fulfill all of his desires without there being any fallen conditioned souls. In fact, the fact that the Lord is able to fulfill his desires, even with the fallen conditioned souls, is testimony to his greatness and magnanimity, that he allows even demoniac conditioned souls to be part of his overall plan. So the reason why everything exists is given very nicely by Srila Prabhupada in this purport, and that it's because of the foolishness of the living entity. And that's all. It's actually due to Krishna's kindness. The Lord could take foolish living entities and just put them into some eternal damnation, which many religions propose, or he could put them into some sort of eternal sleep, which of course we do go into a kind of sleep for a long time in the body of Mahavishnu. But rather, he allows us, yayatamam papantyante tam sutaiva bhajamyaham, he allows us to fulfill our desires. He reciprocates with our desires. So we think we want to imitate him. We want to become one with him. And particularly Srila Prabhupada brings out here that for the conditioned souls who want to be controllers due to misuse of their God-gifted minute independence. So that is the essence, who wants to be the controller. Because frankly, everything else that Krishna has, we also have. Krishna has independence. He is Swarat. Swarat is very much from the word Swaraj, one's own king. The liberated living entity in its natural position has full freedom. So we have freedom like the Lord's, and we have enjoyment like the Lord's. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati comments on Anandam Buddhivardhanam of the Shikshastaka to say that the jiva has infinite capacity for enjoyment, even though the jiva itself is finite. Why is that? Because in harmony with the Lord, we experience the Lord's infinite enjoyment. Very much the way that the parents and elders of a family share their wealth with the children. The children have access to the parents' wealth. Right? It's not that the parents eat nice food and the children are eating old food. Not that the parents are eating club jamuns and puris and the children are eating old rice. No, the parents are sharing their food with the children. The parents share their home with the children. They use their wealth to provide for the children. So in the same way that the Lord's infinite enjoyment is shared with the living entities, to the point that the living entities feel a kind of oneness with the Lord. We have Prahlad Maharaj. It's explained in the Bhagavatam how he would feel oneness with the Lord. The gopis, when Krishna disappeared from Rasalila, felt so one with the Lord that they were thinking, I am Krishna, just see how I'm walking. And just like Krishna gets in the ecstasy of Radharani, Radharani also gets in the ecstasy of Krishna. And not only with Radharani, but all the living entities are able to experience the pleasure of the Lord. So the freedom, the pleasure. We're able to experience the knowledge of the Lord. We're able to, in our liberated state, that. And when we're in harmony with the Lord, we're in touch with that unlimited, ever-expanding knowledge. But what is it that the Lord has that we envy? What the Lord has that we envy is that he is the controller, that he's at the center, that everything is given to him, that all of our enjoyment is dependent on him, and that he can control everything as he desires. And such is our, we find if we look at our life, that all of us, all our frustration stems from the fact that we're not a controller, that we're dependent on others and ultimately on God for what we want. We can't get anything under our own control. You know, we want to control our health, we want to control our finances, we want to control our relationships, we want to control our fame and honor, and we can't. We just can't. You know, we get sick or injured despite our best efforts. People don't like us despite our best efforts. Someone just showed me a comic where this guy says, you know, I bought the best deodorant and I rinse with mouthwash many times a day, and I used anti-dandruff shampoo, and still people don't like me. So I guess some people just don't like me. You know? So some people don't like us. People may blaspheme us. We may lose all of our money despite our best attempts to protect it. So many things. But we're not the controller. We get frustrated that we cannot control other people. We get frustrated we cannot control our things. We get frustrated that we cannot control our own body and our own mind. We want to be the supreme controller. Of course, we're not very good at that. It's not our actual position. This was what Hiranyakashipu wanted. He wanted to control the whole universe. But he wasn't happy when he did that. When he had control over the universe, he was always unhappy. The symptoms of that were that he was always intoxicated and he was always yelling at people for no reason. He was severely chastising the demigods for no reason, because that's not our natural position. Our natural position is to let Krishna control. And when we let Krishna control, we become happy. And here Prabhupada's talking about the steps, right? One wants to become one with him by imitation. And then we become bewildered by the three modes of material nature. The three modes of material nature cover us because we can't imitate the Lord. We can't be the supreme controller. We can't. It's not who we are. There can only be one supreme controller. This point is brought out very clearly by the Yamadutas to Yamaraj in the sixth canto. They said, if you've got more than one controller, they're going to be making different decisions. Now, we have this kind of problem often in a family or a business where the mother wants one thing, the father wants something else, or the vice presidents disagree about how things should be done. And there's got to be an ultimate decision-making person. When George W. Bush was the president, he said, I'm the decider. Right? There has to be an ultimate decider. There has to be someone who has the ultimate control. Right? Sometimes you have a light that has a switch in more than one place. You know, one person turns it off in one place, another person turns it on in another place. Or you have different people adjusting the thermostat. I read an article once about how men and women experience temperature a little differently. And so, you know, in offices, you have the women are dressed more warmly for the temperature that the men want to set it at. So it doesn't work if you have all different people controlling it. You know, why did you change it? Oh, I want it back here. Then there's disharmony, which is all of our struggle here in this world, yes, because each of us are trying to be the controller and we each want to control it in our own way. So it's not possible, and therefore we're covered by these modes of material nature which further bewilder us, which allow us to think, ahankara vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. They allow us to think, yes, I am the doer. I am the controller. I have done this. I have learned this. I have created this. I have accomplished this. I am the doer. Just see my power, just see my potency. And the modes do it in different ways. The mode of ignorance covers an entity almost completely, almost like an animal or a demon, where one's false ego is so great that one never wants to admit that one makes any mistake. One is always perfect, powerful, and happy. In the mode of passion, one wants to be a righteous person. But one is still this idea, I'm going to change the world, I'm going to better the world. And in the mode of goodness, one tries to be the best person by being in harmony with the universe, but still with the idea of being the center. And in these different ways, the material nature controls the living entities. And then going on, Prabhupada says that bewildered by this illusory energy, the living entity thinks that they're a part of the material creation and forgets their spiritual identity. So we've forgotten we don't remember anymore who we are. We have a form, we have a name. We have a Jiva Goswami, in commenting on this chapter, speaks a lot about our swarup, that we have a form. There's sometimes a debate as to whether or not the jiva originally has a form, but the answer is yes. We have a form, we have a nature that is ours, but we've forgotten that. And we think, I'm part of this world. We think, you know, I'm a German, I'm Swiss, I'm Peruvian, I'm Brazilian, I'm from Pakistan, I'm South African, I'm part of this earth planet, I'm a human being, I'm a male, I'm a female, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a Republican, I'm a Democrat, I'm a socialist, I'm a conservative, I'm a liberal. We have all these names. I remember in high school, we had different names. We had the jocks, that's what we called the people who were into sports, and then we had the freaks who were into drugs and free sex, and we had the greasers who were into alcohol and free sex, and we had the nerds who were into their study, and we had all these different. Are you a nerd or are you a freak? Or are you all these upadis, all these designations. I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm a young person, I'm a middle-aged person, I'm an old person, I'm sick, I'm healthy, I'm smart, I'm foolish, I'm good at this, I'm not, all these upadis. And we forget who we are. We forget our original personality. We forget our original taste for serving the Lord, our relationship with the Lord. And Prabhupada said, and thus one becomes entangled in material activities life after life. According to these upadis, all these upadis, I think I have so many things to do, if I'm a South African, I have to work for South Africa. If I'm a woman, then I have to serve a man. If I'm a man, I have to take care of a woman. If I'm somebody's child, I have to serve my parents, and so forth. And we have all these activities in this world. I have to do this. I have, because this is who I am. And it goes on life after life because we want to taste so many parties. Okay, I had that experience. I was a South African man. Now I want to be an Indian woman. Now I want to be a frog in Sri Lanka. And Prabhupada says, this material world is not for the purpose of the Lord, but for the conditioned souls. So the Lord has no purpose here. It's like parents do not buy toys for their own enjoyment. It's not why they buy the toys. They buy the toys for the pleasure of the children, not for their own pleasure. The parents don't buy little toy fire trucks and dolls so that they'll sit down. No, let the children be entertained. Let the children have something to do. And then thus the conditioned souls are subject to repeated birth and death. Why repeated birth and death? Because not all of our specific desires can be accomplished in one life. You can't try to be a man and a woman in the same life. A lot of people try, but you know what? You can't really do it. You got to have different lifetimes to try that. You can't really be a bird and a human in the same life. Again, people try to do it, but you can't really do it. You can't be a demigod and a human in the same life. Again, people try to do it, but you can't really do it. Each life has its own, each body, each life, each story, it has its own particular flavors. It has its own particular kind of enjoyments that's allotted and certain enjoyments that are not allotted. Certain things I can't enjoy in this life. They're just not given to me. Certain sounds I can't hear. Certain things I can't see. Certain abilities I can't have. They're not part of my quota of enjoyment. And in order to enjoy what I am enjoying, I have to be restricted from enjoying those other things. And to get that, I have to get into another life or different relationships with people. Sometimes another living entity is your brother, sometimes they're your father, sometimes they're your wife, sometimes they're your dog, the same living entity. And you may have different lifetimes to experience these different relationships with them. So the jiva has several ways of responding to this situation. One way of responding is trying to be happy here, trying to adjust the material energy so that I become happy here, maybe even thinking I'm becoming happy here by the grace of God. So whether I'm becoming happy here by praying to God or whether I'm becoming happy here on my own, still the principle is I want to become happy here. I want to surround myself with a situation that is very pleasant. And I know one devotee in Honolulu who, when he first read Prabhupada's books, he thought, well, if the world's miserable, I might as well live in Hawaii. So, you know, one can comes to a, tries to live in a nice place, and then one tries to set up a home the way that one desires. One tries to get the food that one likes and the clothes that one likes and the people one likes, to find a compatible mate, to raise children, to be the kind of people you want to be with, to have a job that satisfies your propensities, and on and on and on and on and on. And let me adjust things to be happy. So that's one group of people. And that can go on for a very long time, which is rather surprising, because you would think that after a very short time, a living entity would say, wait a minute, it's not whether I live in Hawaii or Texas. It's not whether I marry this person or that person. It's not whether I wear green or purple. That's not what's the problem. The problem is the external stuff altogether. But it seems that people can go on with this idea of being happy here through material adjustment for many, 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 many lifetimes, many creations, billions of lifetimes. Then there are some who do figure it out. They say, wait a minute, the whole thing is wrong. The whole attempt to be happy here is wrong. Let me become free. Let me get out of my, let me give up my material desires. And you have, of course, many varieties of the quest for freedom, as you have many varieties of the quest for happiness in this world. You have many varieties of the quest for freedom. So some are Shunyavadi, and the Shunyavadi philosophy is becoming more and more popular in the world today. Through Buddhism, let me become nothing. Let me be no self. That to deny the existence of a self altogether and just become nothing. To give up all desires. Right? I was reading about people who have some sort of psychological problem where they feel no emotions whatsoever. You know, they're just detached observers, but they're not really liberated souls. They're just diseased. So the problem with the Buddhists is that our natural position is ananda maya vyasat. We're naturally very happy. So we have those people. We have the people who want to lose their self, but not in terms of total existence. They want to lose their self by becoming one with God, by merging with God, by entering into the Brahman. So that's a little higher than, or a lot higher perhaps, than the voidists. But still, that's not a permanent position, because we want variety. Srila Prabhupada would often say that variety is the mother of enjoyment. And if one meditates deeply on that oft-repeated statement of Srila Prabhupada, that variety is the mother of enjoyment, one would understand that the more spiritually aware one becomes, the more one's consciousness is full of varieties. So there are those who try to become liberated in that way, and then there are even those who try to become liberated by going to Lord Shiva's abode beyond the material universe, or who want to go to Vaikuntha, but for the purpose of becoming liberated. And this desire for bhukti and mukti, this desire for happiness and liberation, very often persists, even if one is on the path of bhakti. That we just think, well, it'll still be me at the center, and it'll still be about my happiness, but it'll be in the Rasleela. You know, I'll get my happiness and me being the controller by being in Rasleela. Or I'll get liberation. You know, I'll go to Rasleela and become liberated. That my main motive for joining Krishna's Leela, my main motive for wanting to go back to Godhead, is either bhukti or mukti. I think of it as a material heaven. You know, okay, well, if I'm going to go to heaven, I might as well go to the ultimate one and get the most happiness. Or we think of it as the ultimate in liberation. And quite frankly, because those two desires, bhukti and mukti, are motivating the beginning devotee, there is a lot in the scriptures and from the acharyas that may even seem to encourage that. That may say, yes, you know, this is where you'll get the greatest happiness, this is where you get ultimate liberation, because otherwise people wouldn't even try for it. If you go to people and say, this is where you're going to get the ultimate self-surrender and love, they'd say, well, I don't think I'm interested in that. And then there are some who really have come to the point, Bahunam Janmanam Mante Ganavamam Papadite Vasudeva Sarani Tisa Mahatma Sidurubaha. Some who've really come to Mahatmanastumam Partadaiving Prakritim Ashrita. Who really have come to the shelter of the internal energy as personified by Lakshmi Devi, Sita Devi, Rukmini Devi, Radharani, and the many, many representations of the internal energy, who exemplify total love. Right? That the internal energy is not about either my own happiness or my own liberation, the ultimate energy of pleasure. The ultimate way to find happiness and liberation is not to be about happiness and liberation, but to be about serving and loving. We have hints of that even in this world. Even in this world, that my greatest happiness and freedom comes in trying to make others happy. Even if it means that I become practically like a slave to work for them. I was reading about this one doctor in Sudan who comes once every 2 years to the United States for a couple days. Otherwise, he just stays there and he works 7 days a week, 14-hour days to serve the people in that war-torn country. And he finds freedom in that service, and he finds happiness in making others happy. Right? What is he doing for his own happiness? Practically nothing. So even materially, we see that if I serve others, if I become the servant of others for their happiness, I can find my own happiness and my own freedom. By giving others happiness, I find my own happiness. By serving others, I find my own freedom. But of course, in the material world, that's not absolutely true. It's only relatively true. But there are some who figure that, oh, that's what I really want. I really want to make Krishna happy, and I really want to serve Krishna. I want to make myself totally surrendered to Krishna's will, to just be an instrument of his will. And oh, surprise, surprise, when we do that, then we get happiness that's without limit, and we get freedom that's without limit. So there are those who figure that out, and it's especially to those who understand about bhakti and about prema, who can see the nature of the world for what it is, who see the material creation honestly and truthfully, and a samsaya, they have no more doubts. Those who become attached to Krishna, Maya Shakta Manapata, they know him in full, free from doubt, and they understand the full nature of the world and why the world is created, that the Lord, being impartial, loving, and kind, says, listen, don't do this. This is not a very good idea. I don't think that this is something that you should do. But, you know, okay, well, if you insist, all right, here's this world for you. And, you know, if you really want to do this, then, well, you know, but it's not... It's not my suggestion. Right. Like Prabhupada says in 287, he says, the cause was because we wanted to enjoy and did not like to serve Krishna. Why should I serve Krishna? I shall enjoy. We wanted to be an enjoyer independent of Krishna. We wanted to be a controller independent of Krishna. So that is our great foolishness. So, questions, comments, correction?
Just one moment. All right, I've unmuted everyone. If anyone has a question or a comment, please go ahead.
I have a question, Mataji.
Yeah.
You talk about, you know, not finding happiness in this material world, and I understand that to a certain point, you know. But at the same time, if you're not so spiritually evolved yet, it's like you could take that sentence, and it could be done the wrong way. You know, because I remember, well, even until now, it's like, you need a certain something to keep mentally balanced. I don't know if I make any sense. It's not like, you know,
Well, it's not the material world that's the problem. The problem is our desire to be the controller. That's the problem. So you can be completely happy in the material world if you don't want to be the controller. You know, and we're not suggesting, you know, we're not like these monks who only eat dry, unsalted bread and cabbage soup and wear hair shirts and, you know, we're not impersonalists. In bhakti, we surround ourselves, frankly, with sensory pleasures. You know, the Muslims won't have any painting of any object, only designs. But we have beautiful paintings of Krishna's lila. You know, I don't know about everybody listening, but, you know, I got these beautiful paintings of Krishna's lila up on my wall. You know, I have a beautifully decorated altar. I decorate my altar with fresh flowers. I mean, how many people have fresh flowers in their house every day?
It's just like, for example,
yeah,
if I cook, okay, mm-hmm. Cooking is always an expression of my love. That's just right. My being, that's just who I am. So if I cook something, you know, some prasadam or something, then I serve it to the devotees or my family or something like this, and they like it. It just gives me so much happiness. So is that wrong, that happiness? Or I'm an affectionate person. Every time I meet somebody, whether the devotees or not, I give them a hug. And it just gives me some kind of balance. Is that wrong? I mean, we're not supposed to be happy?
We are supposed to be happy. We're supposed to be happy by pleasing Krishna in this world. So if your purpose for giving someone a hug is to make Krishna smile, then you will feel great happiness by hugging somebody.
But doesn't Krishna give us a minute independence, right?
Yes.
So we use that independence in a sense, we're controllers of our desire.
Yes.
Isn't there some room for controlling, I mean, particularly for the neophyte, Prabhupada often used the word dovetailing, and it seemed like that's what he was talking about, just take whatever our propensities are, natural propensities, psychologically and physically, to control and manipulate this material world. In the beginning, just dovetail it, just do it for Krishna.
Yeah, of course. Yatkarosi yatignasi yatjahosi didasi yatyatipasesi kanti yatakirishvamadarpanam. Of course. But that's not the ultimate, as Lord Chaitanya explained with Ramananda Roy. That's not the ultimate. Otherwise, we just become demigods.
Right. We become Sakama.
We stay as Sakama devotees, and we become demigods. Let me use my desire to control, and let me use my desire to enjoy, with me at the center, me, the controller, everything, in a way that will also be in harmony with Krishna's plan. You know, okay, yeah, sure. Start with that.
Good start.
Yeah.
Good start. But if we're still doing that, you know, 10, 20, 30 years into bhakti, we need to fix something. So, you know, we may still be doing that to some extent, but yes, of course we should be happy in this world. And Krishna wants us to be happy. Krishna told the Flora Sudama, you know, you'll go back to Godhead and you'll also have all prosperity and health and strength and happiness in this world.
Do you think that the difference is one, happiness is like more selfish?
Yes.
Like what you were saying, selfish?
Yes.
Instead of giving?
Yes.
Because even, I kind of also see that even in this path, and we're trying to you know, become more Krishna conscious or something, somebody could be more self-centered in that situation.
Oh, definitely. Yes, it's about giving. And giving to please whom? Because even in giving...
Krishna.
Yeah, I can be giving but actually wanting to please myself. I can be giving thinking, well, I'm giving so much and I'm going to get back. You know, I'm serving ISKCON and ISKCON will honor me and respect me. The leaders of ISKCON will acknowledge my service. I'll get a plaque in my name. And, you know, they may not. The leaders of your temple, the leaders of your zone may, in fact, just criticize you. So, you know, and then you become bitter. Oh, I worked so hard for the society and I was treated like a piece of dirt. So then I wasn't really giving. I was giving with the idea of getting something back. Or I can be giving to the, you know, someone who's not Krishna. I can be giving, trying to please my husband and trying to please my children and thinking, again, if I please them, then I'll feel automatically happy. But that doesn't exactly work because we're not really part of our family. We're not really part of our society. And even if I'm thinking I'm just going to be happy with my children's happiness, which is higher, you know, that's higher than thinking I'm going to get something back. But still, you know, your children graduate from college because you worked hard scrubbing floors, and you're vicariously enjoying your happiness. But the problem is, I'm not really part of my children. So their happiness doesn't really fill me with happiness. Just like I'm not this body. So when this body eats really good food or has a really soft bed, or that doesn't really give me happiness because it's not me. And so if I'm giving to others, either to get something back, then if I'm giving to others to get something back, I will become bitter and angry. Because I will never get back what I give, and I'll never get back exactly what I want, exactly how I want. It just isn't going to happen. If I give to others thinking I'm going to enjoy vicariously through them, again, that's a little higher than thinking they're going to exactly give something back to me, but I'm not them. I'm not their body, and I'm not their mind, less than I am my body and my mind. So, you know, how is that going to work? But if I'm giving because I want Krishna to be happy, I am part of Krishna. So when Krishna's happy, I feel unlimitedly happy. And even if I don't get anything back in the world, and even if, you know, the result doesn't turn out right for the person to whom I'm giving, I'm going to feel extreme happiness, and the whole world will appear as a beautiful, perfect place. So, is that okay?
Yes, Mataji.
And I think that can be done even by a beginner. I really do. I don't think that one needs to be like some super advanced, super pure, amazing, you know, spiritual Olympiad to do that. I'm taking care of my children so Krishna will smile at me. I'm taking care of my husband so Krishna will smile at me. I'm cleaning my house so Krishna will smile at me. I'm getting exercise for my body so Krishna will smile at me. And it is actually natural to do that, and then we feel, then we are happy in this world anyway. I mean, then there's no hell or heaven. There's no everything is beautiful and wonderful beyond some Disney movie. Is that all right? I mean, in the beginning, yes, you need some scaffolding. You need some support, and you need to say, well, I really want to enjoy this myself, but I know I'm supposed to offer it to Krishna first. You should kind of try to mature beyond that.
What's so bad about the philosophy that if the material world is miserable, well, I might as well be in Hawaii?
Nothing.
Here, he wanted me to go to Siberia. I suppose I'd, you know, pack up and do it, but since Krishna's not indicating that, then boy, I couldn't think of a better place in the world to be. It's so easy to get up in the morning real early and go for a beautiful walk and chant the most wonderful japa.
Nothing wrong with that at all, but just don't think that being in Hawaii is going to make you, you know, that's going to solve your problems.
No.
I
can look in the mirror and see the writing on the wall.
I love being in Hawaii. I really, really love it. I didn't at first, but I love being in Hawaii. I love seeing the ocean, and it's warm all year round, and you can just get these fresh, locally grown, organic fruits to offer to the Lord, and tropical scented flowers to offer to the Lord, and life is so much simpler here. You don't need to spend any money on heating and air conditioning, and you don't need a lot of clothes, and it's wonderful. And indeed, in former ages, when people were pious, the whole planet was like this. You know, there's evidence that in the present Siberia, talking about going to Siberia, they've uncovered frozen mammoths with subtropical vegetation still in their stomachs.
Wow.
So, you know, the whole planet was a tropical paradise, and in former ages, there wasn't need for agriculture at all. You know, in Satyayuga, there wasn't need for the four varnas. Everyone was Hamsa. And everything, you know, the weather was always perfect. You didn't need some kind of complicated shelter, agriculture. There was no need of government in Satyayuga. There was no varnas. There was no kshatriyas. There were no towns and villages. People just lived wherever they wanted. They just got their food easily. And they were engaged in meditation. And they were engaged in healing and chanting and meditation, which they could do very easily. They had a very fixed and controlled mind. They had access to subtle and mystic powers to get what they needed. And that was on this Earth planet in former ages. And that is the way that Krishna would like the Earth planet to be. You know, that is how Krishna would like the material world to be. And indeed, a lot of the material world is like that. And keep in mind, again, this is the lowest of the middle planets, which means that all the planets higher up than us have a better atmosphere than we have, and we even have that atmosphere in Satyayuga. Even in Dwapara Yuga, the Brahmins had such powers that they could say, "I curse you to be a frog," and you'd be a frog. You know, that was just a few thousand years ago that the demigods, I was just reading Bhagavatam, that the demigods were regularly coming and having interaction. This is just 5,000 years ago. It wasn't that long ago that the demigods were regularly having interaction with this planet. Arjuna went to Swarga to visit Indra. I mean, what's his name? King Kamudi, he went to Lord Brahma's planet. Yes, Krishna would love for us to be in a even favorable material situation, but unfortunately, you know, we wreck it. We take all the nice things that are, you know, we're like a child who takes nice food and just throws it around the room instead of putting it in their mouth. You know? A child who takes the nice food their parents give them and just smears it on their arms instead of eating it. Takes their toys and instead of playing with them nicely, just wrecks them. So then we end up on the Earth in Kali Yuga, you know. Earth in Kali Yuga. It's an ocean of faults. The only benefit is that we have Mahaprabhu, which is a huge benefit. We have Lord Chaitanya, we have Lord Nityananda, Srila Prabhupada, who comes to the Earth in Kali Yuga. Oh my God, you know. And we have this process whereby in one lifetime, so this is the benefit. Kali Yuga lifetimes are very short. You know, once you pass 60, no one's surprised if you die. Oh, you're 63. Oh, well, it's understood, you know. Lifetimes are very, very short. And in this very short life, just by chanting the holy name and becoming part of the Sankirtan movement, we can go, not only can we become liberated, not only can we go to a higher planet, but we can go to Goloka Vrindavan. So that's our benefit. But yeah, sure, you know, if you can be in Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement and live in a nice, why not? You know, why not? But our main thing is being in the Sankirtan movement. Our main thing is being servants. Our main thing is being dedicated to the mission, because that's our process. We don't have access to the processes of former ages, even in Hawaii. You know, We really don't. Even we go to the Himalayas, and it's not our, you know. Radhanath Swami was meditating. Before he became a devotee, he was meditating on a rock in the Ganga every day for a month doing his own meditation. And he heard the Ganges River chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. That's our main process. But yes, Krishna wants us to be happy even in terms of material prosperity. Of course he does. Krishna does not at all desire that the living entity be in any sort of difficulty, even on the external material sensory platform. You know, if he did everything the way he wanted, first of all, nobody would even be in the material world, let alone be in the unlimited spiritual world. But even in the material world, all the living entities would have a heavenly, amazing situation. You know, we're fools. We perform sinful activity and so forth. You know. What to say?
In the Gita, there's a nice verse where Krishna says, Sahaja Gapajashrishta Purvacha Vajapati Anena Prasavishadvam Eshavosvishta Kamadu. I don't remember the exact translation, but some of the effect that in the beginning of creation, I've sent forth generations of men and demigods and sacrifices and said, you know,
be happy.
Be thou happy by the sacrifices. They'll bestow upon you all desirable things for living happily.
And attaining liberation.
And attaining liberation.
Bingo. So that's what Krishna wants. What Krishna wants is that even in the material world, there's practically unlimited prosperity materially that everyone... When Lord Ramachandra is the king, when he personally comes and he's the king on this earth planet, there's not even death for those who don't want it. There's no mental anxiety. There's no disease. There's abundant, nutritious food. Everything's clean and beautiful. People have great, subtle powers. You know what I mean? And the age of Kali, the sages are amazed that there'll be discord even between husband and wife, it says in the first canto. That's astonishing to them. They just can't... The sages of Namasharanya, they can't fathom. How is there going to be discord between a husband and a wife? Is even that? So, you know, this is what Krishna wants, and it's how he designed things. This is why Krishna has the whole battle of Kurukshetra, to put Yudhisthira on the throne, and, you know, the descriptions of the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the descriptions of the reign of Lord Ramachandra and Prithu, our Dhruva on the earth planet, King Uttanapad had a staircase made out of emerald. You know, not an emerald ring, not some teeny, teeny little, you know. He had a staircase made out of emerald.
What was that Bhagavad Gita reference you just spoke about?
Which one? Yeah. About living happily and attaining liberation?
Yes.
That's in the third chapter.
Tenth verse.
Tenth verse.
3:10.
Okay.
Thank you.
And that's, yeah. Now see, you also have people who, how would you say, misuse the fact that the Lord wants us to be also materially prosperous. You know, there's all these Christians preaching this prosperity gospel. God wants you to be rich, God wants you to be healthy, God wants you to be this. But they twist it into a demigod mentality. They twist it into that, you know, worship God to be rich. Worship God to be healthy. That your reason for worshiping God is to have material prosperity. And Prabhupada even condemns the worship of God to be moral. Where people will say the reason we're worshiping God is that without God you cannot be moral. So if our purpose is material happiness, if our purpose is even fairness and justice and morality, and that's why we're worshiping God, that's not bhakti. It's mixed. It's karma mishra bhakti. But it's not uttam bhakti. So uttam bhakti is, I understand that the Lord's desire, what the Lord prefers, what he wants, is for everyone, even in the material world, to have unlimited material prosperity and attain liberation. But due to my own karma, I may not deserve that in this life. That may not be, you know, what I have engineered for myself as my own karma. And therefore, tatena kampam suksamikshanara, no. That whatever happens to me in this life, I accept as my own destiny, and that it's been, you know, mitigated by the grace of the Lord, and I just work on falling in love with the Lord. And the earth planet in Kali Yuga has that benediction that's quite easy to do. All right, I think we should stop here. Thank you very much. Lupopa Ki Jai.
Thank you.